Man, God, I really, sometimes I fucking hate the internet, man.
What has it done to you?
Everyone, like, today was supposed to be such a joyous occasion. The Star Wars teaser came out, and everybody just fucking complains about it.
Dude, and I don't know why. It looks awesome.
People are like, the lightsabers fucking look stupid. Hey, guess what, dumbass? It's an imaginary laser sword.
Well, and beyond that,
chill the fuck
like,
out. And plus it looks awesome.
Like, nobody had seen Darth Maul's lightsaber before, and now everybody thinks that's fucking baller. And it looks like a claymore, basically.
It makes sense. That actually, it kind of makes sense that they would have, like, a hilt, right?
Yeah. Because you could just slide down the length of the blade and then cut the dude's hand off and you're done.
I'm pretty sure that's how Anakin beat Dooku, right?
Yeah, that
he
is.
Cut his hands off by doing that.
And that's how Skywalker... No, that's not how Skywalker lost his hand. That's how Skywalker took off Vader's hands.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, people... Some people just... People who complain about the prequel trilogy are going into this movie with the wrong attitude. They assume it's going to be bad because it's not the original trilogy.
Yeah.
And my comment to them is that if you want the original trilogy, go fucking watch it.
And, go watch and if the you original want, if you trilogy. Want really good extended universe cinematic stuff, play SWTOR, play The Old Republic. Like, there's tons of content out there if you want that kind of vibe. Like, just go watch it. It's out there.
And, like, the thing is, George Lucas said he was never going to make another Star Wars movie. If he had never sold it to Disney, this wouldn't have this wouldn't be going on right now, right?
Yeah.
And people are complaining about, Disney better do a good job, blah, blah, blah. Shut the fuck up, okay? We should be thanking our lucky stars that we're getting more Star Wars at all. And the fact that it's a company like Disney, who has more money than they know what to do with, they can back the movie in the way that it needs to be backed.
Dude, and you know, people were all, like, concerned when Marvel got bought by Disney, because they were like, oh, it's going to Disneyfy the comics, there's going to be nothing hardcore or cool or gritty in the comics anymore.
And everyone loves them.
Yeah, and now Marvel is fantastic, because Disney just said, hey, you guys there, we like what you do, here's more money, do it more and do it better with the more money we're giving you. By the way, maybe start thinking about doing your own movies, too. Here's some more money for that also. Like, that's all they did. And I think they cut the Marvel Max series, which I'm okay with, really. It's fine.
Honestly, like, yeah.
Ooh, Punisher Max. I'm not really losing a whole lot there.
Yeah, the thing is, like, if I was going to read those comics, it's the reason I'm not reading them has nothing to do with the fact that they're Max or not.
Yeah. It's just because that's where Frankencastle was, so you had to read that.
And see, like, the thing is, it's like, it's like we got 90 seconds of a movie that's not even done yet. Okay, they finished principal photography, but they haven't done any editing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that there's still many special effects that they need to do. And, like, look, they're paying attention to continuity because the Millennium Falcon has a new dish now. It's different.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I really
see.
Think...
Here's the thing, like, so I went on Reddit on the star in the r/StarWars.
Yeah.
And it was like everybody loved it. And then I went anywhere else on the internet, and I feel like people were fucking bitching about it.
I think it's okay,
like, you know, the little soccer ball droid?
Yeah.
People complained about that, how it's goofy. It's like, come on, guys, R2 and 3PO are goofy. Yoda's goofy. It's like they never watched a Star Wars movie before.
You know what? Make me choose between soccer ball droid and Jar Jar, and I will pick soccer ball droid any day of the week. And I've seen that
exactly.
For all of like a second and a half. I'm fine if that has as big of a role as Jar Jar Binks.
And like the thing is, like, I'm an unabashed fan of the prequel trilogy because they're not great movies. Like I'm not gonna say that they stand up to the original trilogy. But they're still cool movies. They have cool Star Wars, they have laser swords and spaceships. and The Force, and, you know, there are worse movies that I like.
That's true.
There are worse movies that I have seen and I enjoy just as much as the prequel trilogy.
You know what? So, I think a big chunk of it is that it ties into all the people who really enjoyed the extended universe. It kind of feels probably like a 1-2 punch. Because if you read the books and you're tied to them, you're like, oh yeah, Thrawn was awesome. It'd be great if we could get the Heir to the Empire. We can get that trilogy as episode 7, 8, 9. If you just make those in the movies, that would be great. And then, yes, then Disney buys it and Disney says, actually, that stuff never happened. It's not canon anymore. And by the way, here's a soccer ball droid. I think people are like taking it that way. But
here's the thing. Here's what I say to those people.
Thrawn had a friggin' force magical lizard on his shoulder for half of the book. Like, ooh. Wait,
here's what I say to those people. Just because they're not making a movie of that doesn't mean you have to stop enjoying it.
Yeah.
It's not going anywhere. If you like the book so much, you could read it again.
And I
look at Marvel Comics. Look at Marvel and the movie universe.
Yeah. And
I love DC, Guardians of the Galaxy.
DC and the DC TV universe. Flash is great.
I love Guardians of the Galaxy. I love the comic. And the movie was not the comic. But guess what? I loved the movie
so
too.
So good.
Dude, and it's like, it's kind of like the people who complained about New 52, saying that New 52 destroyed all of the canon and continuity that came before it. And I mean, yeah, that's true. Like, if you go and you read, like, Batgirl now, it's Barbara Gordon and she's up and walking and whatever. But that doesn't mean that you can't go back and read the, like, 10 years of comics where she wasn't. Like, all of that stuff is still there. You can still go back and read it. It still exists out there in the world. It's not disappeared. Sure, it's not, you know, finger quotes, canon anymore. But it's not like you have to stop enjoying it. And it's not like the fact that it isn't canon anymore should ruin what is now going to become canon. Like, it's separate things. They're basically just saying, okay, that was alternate reality. That was Earth 2, and now we're going to go with Earth 1.
Like, the thing is, this is what it boils down to. And I wrote a really long Facebook post. I don't know if you guys saw it.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It boils down to this. It's that everybody has this picture in their mind of what Star Wars should be. And this is not it. Because there's no way it could be.
Yeah.
I love Star Wars. You know that. Everybody knows that. I wear it proudly. And this
and
is
we
not...
just did a whole trilogy of episodes on Star Wars.
This is not my... This is, in my mind, this movie is not episode 7. That is in my mind. But you know what? That's fine. Because there's... Because if it was, I would call J.J. Abrams and yell at him and say, get out of my head. It's never going to be the movie that... The only head that this movie exists in is J.J. Abrams.
Yeah. Anyway, you guys ready?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Alchemical?
I know. I don't remember what I did the first time. Okay.
Jinx! Owe me a Coke.
Okay, everybody. Welcome to another Alchemical episode of the Atomic Power Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hello.
And if you hear giggles in the background, that is my wife watching Heart of Dixie with headphones on. She doesn't know I'm talking about her, but if you hear a giggle, that's her. And this week, we read Full Metal Alchemist, Volume 2 by Hiromu Arakawa, collecting issues 5 to 8. This is the second episode in our Volume 2 series, so leading up to episode 200, we went back, looked at all the stuff we've read, and decided these are the ones we want to read the next issues of. So Jen picked Full Metal Alchemist from our first manga series, I think. And I don't remember if I used Alchemical that time or not. I don't know.
Go back and check. The Statue of Limitations has passed on that.
That one
was
like a couple
years
ago.
Yeah.
It was more than a couple. I feel like we've done more than one manga arc, haven't we? Yeah.
Yeah.
We've done two.
Yeah. So I watched the original show all the way through, and then we read this for this show, and then I watched the anime of Brotherhood a little ways through, but it wasn't as much different, so I didn't want to take as much time to read, like, watch it all. And then I ended up reading the manga all the way through, so I have basically watched these four episodes, watched or read these four issues four times now. Five, if you include this second time reading it.
Same here. I did the exact same thing. and I will say, like, finished Brotherhood. It follows the manga pretty exactly, and it is excellent.
Okay, I really want to see that ending done in the anime, because that ending is way different.
I'm the outlier here, I guess, because this is the first time I've read these issues. I probably said I was going to go back, I was going to read the rest of Fullmetal Alchemist. I didn't, because we read a lot of things. I watched the original anime series a long time ago. I haven't gone back and watched it since, and I haven't watched Brotherhood yet either. They're on my list of things to do, so... my point of reference when reading this was the original anime, mm-hmm. and my memories of it from a long time ago. So when that becomes pertinent to the conversation as we're going along, I'll mention it. But I just wanted to say that I'm coming at it from a different place than you guys. So then...
I will say that for this is in the first season of mm-hmm. both the original anime and Brotherhood, which means that both of those animes followed the manga, so we should actually still all be looking at the same reference material, despite differences in what we've watched.
Right, but like there were certain parts in this volume that I remember differently. But as it comes up in our discussion, I'll mention it.
So I don't know about you guys. But for me, in all the times I've read it, and every time I think about Fullmetal Alchemist, there's a couple, like, things that stick out in my mind. The one is in the anime later on when Elric is on the run. But regardless, whenever I think about this manga or this anime, there is one thing that sticks out in my mind. And it's like one episode or one issue, and it's fucking Xiao Tucker and Nina. That shit sticks in my head like glue.
So that's actually that part when we came to it in the, as I was reading this morning, as I came across this part, the part with Nina, I was like, wait a minute, didn't I feel like this like stretched out over a longer period of time? Like there was more interaction with Nina before she became a Chimera. It seemed like it happened
it's
really
only
fast
one episode.
Yeah, I don't remember in the anime. Sure, it might have been like she was like she said hi or something every once in a while, but I'm pretty sure the whole thing happened in one episode. But I could see why it would be a bigger thing in your memory.
I think I'm also getting it confused a little bit with the part I seem to remember a part in the anime where Edward and Alphonse stay with Hughes' family?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Lieutenant Colonel Hughes has a daughter, too, right?
Yep.
Alicia.
I think I'm confusing Alicia and Nina a little bit in my memory.
Well, and Tucker shows up later on in the show, too. No, because yeah, he's dead.
He gets killed by Scar.
Not. Yeah. No.
You're
no.
thinking Marco, I think.
Yeah, Marco. It's Marco, right? Not Markov.
Okay. Mm-hmm. They're kind of similar because they both have the, you know, they do like biological transmutation and stuff. So they're kind of similar in that Marco and Tucker are. But I think in my memory I was confusing Nina with Hughes' daughter.
Yeah,
because like Hughes is one of my favorite characters. I really like him because like he's not a state alchemist. But he holds his own really well in the same way that Hawkeye does.
Oh no, like, nobody holds their own like Hawkeye does. She's baller.
Well, I mean, like they kind of like from an authoritative standpoint, they're kind of on the same level as it's kind of hard to say it. Authoritative because this is a military organization and there's a chain of command, mm-hmm. but they're like their presence is the same as, like, Mustang, where, you know, they have the same, like, gravitas, I guess,
mm-hmm.
in different ways. So Hughes stands out a lot to me because he is not a state alchemist, but he's an important character, more so later on in regards to where we are in the reading in the manga. He becomes a lot more relevant later, yeah. as you guys know.
Mm-hmm.
But he just stood out a lot for me. And I just realized we were talking about Nina, and I just started talking about Hughes. And nobody even wrote Hughes down in the show notes.
No, yeah, I forgot to put him on the list.
No, but I mean, we could. Yeah, I really like Hughes. I think he's a cool guy, and I like him because he, you know, Mustang, at least on the surface, treats Edward and, like, a lot of the other state alchemists as, you know, Colonel Mustang's a great leader because he, you know, he doesn't. You know, he is emotionally invested in the people that are working under him, but he doesn't let it show.
Yeah, and him as a leader too, like he leads by example a lot too.
Yeah, but what's cool about Hughes is that he's not afraid to show that he cares.
Yeah,
and I felt to me he was. At least, I hate to say superficially, but I mean on the surface. I don't mean like superficially, in the negative connotation. Like, he was Al and Ed's friend. Like, he was friendly to them immediately. He never. I think he remembered. Mm-hmm. He always had it in his mind that these are kids, you know, and he treated them. You know, he treated them with respect. He never talked down to them. But mm-hmm. he spoke to them in a respectful way. He didn't treat them like they were adults, like I feel like Mustang did, but I feel like Mustang does that because of the position that he's in. You know, he's a military leader. Hughes is too, to a certain extent, but he also remembers, he's good at understanding what the situation is and can act appropriately, where Mustang has to hold a certain line because he's the guy in charge, right?
Yeah, and Mustang so is that's commanding officer really too, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's the commanding officer of everybody in like the whole East unit. City, right?
Yeah,
and Hughes is from Central, and it's actually kind of interesting because Hughes is a lieutenant colonel, so I think he's only one rank under Mustang, but he's like so much more familiar. Although, so in the anime, for listeners who may not have seen it, Hughes' whole thing is he loves his family. And he's always mm-hmm. like, you know, look at my daughter, look at my wife, they're so awesome. And he's really like this bubbly, sweet, exuberant personality. He's just like uber lovable. And did you guys get the sense in this volume of the manga that he was like darker and a bit more sarcastic? You know, like, he sees Sho Tucker's corpse, and he's like, you know, are you telling us to put this corpse on trial? There doesn't seem to be very much, like, sympathy that we, I think, saw in the anime. And then, I don't know, I don't think we ever got him being, like, super bubbly here. And that struck me as interesting. Well,
I think in the manga he has more of a defined role. Like, he feels much more of, like, internal investigations or, like, a detective kind of role. Like, he's the one who's actively trying to figure out what's going on here. And he's the one who's actively trying to figure out what's happening with Scar. Whereas in the show, he's just kind of like, his role within the military is just kind of more ambiguous. It's not as strictly defined, I feel, as it is here. So it allows more breathing room for his character to do those kinds of things with his family. I think that stuff does come up with him eventually here later as you kind of interact with him more through the manga. But
I mean, I think we get little flashes of it, like after the fight with Scar, he like pops up and says, "Oh, I was hiding," and then when he delivers the message to Ed while they're getting on the train, he's very very friendly. Mm-hmm. He, I think, you know, he's delivering a serious message, right, from Mustang, but he does it in a kind of fun way. And so, yeah, I think we get a little bit of it. I could see where you're coming from, Andy, about the less definitive role in the anime, but I feel, you know, we don't get that much of him. The thing is, like, especially for me, when I think about him, it's kind of hard to separate him, like the version of him from the manga, from the anime, because I haven't read the rest of the manga.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But whatchamacallit, you know, here I think we do certainly get flashes of it, and so my opinion of him in the manga is colored by what I know of him in the anime. So he's a different character, but he really is like, he's still probably my favorite character, at least so far. I kind of rambled there, sorry guys.
Well, he toes the line, right? Because you're right, like Mustang as the commanding officer is in the position where he has to treat them as adults. Ed is a national alchemist, he's part of this organization, you're his commanding officer, you can't cut him slack because he's young. He passed the test, he passed everything, he is under your command, it doesn't matter how old he is. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, that's the one end. And the other end is Agreed. Armstrong, who calls him youngster, yes, and stuff all the time, and is like, don't worry, youngster, I'll take you under my wing, and I'll make sure you're safe. And Ed's like, I don't fucking need that. I'm fine, bro. But, I mean, Armstrong's amazingly awesome for all of the other reasons. But Hughes is good because he kind of toes the line between the two. He doesn't talk down to Ed and Al, but he recognizes that they don't have family other than each other. And what Hughes has is family and a lot of love. And that's the one thing he can offer them on a personal level. He's like, I can make you feel appreciated the same way a family could.
And I think looking at Hughes on the spectrum where Mustang is one and Armstrong is the other is really good because you know, Armstrong certainly does, I guess, talk down. I kind of agree with what you're saying, like he talks down to you know, to Ed, but he does it in a he doesn't do it in a mean way.
No, I don't think it's disrespectful or anything. I think it's just the Armstrong way passed on from generation to generation.
He's more familiar. You know, it's like he's talking to them like little brothers or something. He gives them guff, but there's never any sense that he's like, you know, actually mean.
Yeah, there's no sense Ed's younger, he's calling him youngster out of disrespect. I think it's just, you're younger, so I'm calling you youngster.
That's kind of what's great about the whole organization is they... Well, not the whole organization, but at least Mustang's little corner of the world. Everybody treats Ed with a certain amount of respect. Nobody is actively mean to him, you know, which is really great. And Alphonse too. Like they kind of understand where the kids are coming from and are letting them operate to their own ends within the, you know, within the rules of the organization.
And I think...
And it's nice to see.
I think also a lot of them have... They have a lot of respect for these kids, not just because of what they went through, but the fact that Ed, so young, has already accomplished so much. Like, mm-hmm. There's that sense of, oh my god, what have they gone through? That's terrible. How could you even... You know, how could you even still be moving forward? You know, like, that would have destroyed me. Like, there's that kind of thing. But then there's also, every once in a while, you hear them, like, talk about Ed and Al, and they're like, they're so young, and they're national alchemists. Like, that's ridiculous. It's almost unheard of. And so there's, like, it's the dual thing of pity and respect that everybody seems to give them. And it's interesting how that interacts with different characters in this. But I gotta say, like, we just jumped right into character, which I think is the big strength of this manga, because this is an action manga, right? This is in the same vein or same audience, at least, as, say, like, a One Piece or a Naruto, right? A little bit older skewing audience, of course, but the same kind of general genre of action manga. But this, the characters are so strong and so well-defined, like, from the beginning. It's such a refreshingly character-driven action manga. And the whole cast is complex, too. You know, like, you get a certain level of complexity out of a lot of these other mangas, like One Piece and Naruto and all those other ones. But, like, these people are complex not just in the fact that they have a goal and a motive. These people, they have a goal and a motive, and the way they interact with this person is different from the way they interact with that person. And these characters tend to be complex from the page that they appear on. Like, Mustang is complex from the start. And Armstrong is complex from the start, too, actually. I really do appreciate it about this comic.
I think one of the things that makes that complexity and, you know, in turn makes this so enjoyable is that all of the characters have, like, a really good balance of kind of light and dark to them. Like, there's comedy and grit. And, for instance, like, you see it in Ed and Al, like, you know, they bicker and fight like brothers. People always mistake Al for being the Full Metal Alchemist, which pisses off Ed, things like that. And you see, like, a lot of this comedic interaction between them and other characters and each other. But then, you know, you get, like, the flashes of their backstory where we see Ed's nightmare, where his mom is praising him, and then she's like, except you couldn't put me back together, and she, like, explodes in a puddle of blood. Right?
So like, brutal.
That is so dark. That is so, so dark. Or, you know, seeing Nina and Alexander transmuted into the Chimera, oh god, and then, you know, Ed blames himself, and so does Al. You know, they're blaming themselves, and they think, you know, we, not only did we not save this girl's life, we've done this. We have created, you know, such a taboo monstrosity ourselves, and you get, like, this really wonderful sense of depth from that, because, you know, I think we see a lot of things where you have the gritty, dark character or the comedic character, but this blends us, and they seem like real people.
Yeah, and, like, the difference between Al and Nina is really, really small. Like, they are... The things that created them, the process, the transmutation, like, all of that must have been incredibly similar. The only thing that made Al successful, probably, well, in air quotes, successful, and Nina unsuccessful, is that Ed's motivation was out of love for her brother, and Xiao Tucker's motivation was out of fear for his next review. Like, Xiao Tucker did not have proper motivation. I don't think he was willing to sacrifice himself in this transmutation to make it work the way that Ed was. And, like, if that's the sole dividing line, then the actual act of what Ed and Al did is not that much different from what Xiao Tucker did to Nina and the dog. The actual physical, I went, I drew this circle, I did this transmutation, that's not very much different at all.
And that's the scary part, because we see that, you know, Ed and Al are protagonists and they're good guys, and we know that they want to help people and get their bodies back, but they wouldn't hurt anyone. But it's, you know, they say, okay, you can't do human transmutation, and you see good people do it and you see very bad people do it, and it starts a really, I think, interesting moral discussion. Like, you know, how wrong, despite the fact that they're good people, were Ed and Al for doing this? And I think, you know, you could probably go on about that for days.
Yeah, and I think we brought this up when we first read this comic, too. That, like, their payment wasn't just... Because the whole thing with transmutation, at least on the show, is that you have to pay something in order to get something. And, like, their payment was huge. Just to reclaim their lives.
But, and, oh man, and then it's, I love that one of the big questions that this anime and manga ask is like, what is the value of a human soul? If you're dealing with equivalent exchange, what is the appropriate exchange for a life? And it delves into, like, partly here, I mean, it's discussed, but if you read the rest of the series or watch it, it goes into it so well. I love this. I love this series so much. I'm just fangirling out. Excuse me.
It's all good. And then we were talking about, like, we were talking originally about the balance between comedy and darkness, and we get that in Roy Mustang, too. Like, Mustang, we get it in one scene, in one really good scene, where he has taken on the burden of leadership, and the way that he chooses to lead is by example. If he's going to go out there to fight Scar with his team, he's going to be the one to jump into the fight first. And he jumps into the fight first out of a sense of responsibility, and he jumps into the fight completely forgetting the fact that his flame alchemy does not work in the rain. And so yeah. Hawkeye takes him out, and then we get that comical scene where Mustang's like, oh yeah, I completely fucking forgot. But it's like,
and then
even
he's
in that
the
kind
background of every
that.
Panel too.
Yeah, and it was there was so much build up to his flame alchemy, and then Hawkeye just takes him down.
Yeah,
but then Hawkeye, I don't know. I love Hawkeye.
Hawkeye and Mustang together are my favorite characters in this whole series because their interactions are so much fun, and. Mm. Like, you can tell, like, there's so much trust, and they rely on each other, and you can even see it here. It's like, she knows exactly what he's doing, and he knows that she'll be there to save his ass. And they just kind of each do their thing, and they both, you know, like, neither of them comes to harm here. It's, their interactions are great, and I love that she just leg sweeps him, and then starts shooting at Scar, like, she's a badass.
Yeah. And there's no alchemy in her either. She's just a badass. Yeah, I really like her because she also has that same kind of thing. Although I think as a character, she's darker in a way because she never cracks a smile in this manga. You know, certainly not in these four issues. It's all duty and following orders, and like, there's almost not much sense of self to her here. Like, what is her personality in this manga other than dutiful?
Well, I think there's humor too, because I mean, when she tells Ed and Al she can't go on the train with them, her line is, I'm too busy babysitting the colonel, someone needs to keep him in line. It's like, I think you know, she has a sense of humor about it. She's just more sarcastic. She's deadpan. She's
yeah,
deadpan
that's
in
true.
Her humor.
Deadpan.
Because I think she makes fun of him, too, when his glove doesn't work, right? She's like, she says something mean to him, I think. I need to look it up. But, I don't know. She's probably my favorite if I had to choose between her and Mustang.
Oh, yeah. If you have to choose the two. I don't know. My favorite character in this comic is definitely Armstrong because he's awesome.
Oh
yeah, I really
Hawkeye.
Like Armstrong.
I really like the moments of like, why did he take his shirt off?
Yes, see that was Hawkeye's line, right? Hawkeye was the one who said that. That's the interactions between like the more deadpan, quiet people, like or not quiet, but you know, calm people like Mustang and Hawkeye, and then Armstrong. It's these character interactions that really build the comedy in this comic.
Yeah. Armstrong is 100% balls to the wall. Because it's his scene. It's his moment. And he's ready for his close-up. And he wants to show off all the awesome ab work he's been doing in the gym. He wants this magnificent Armstrong physique that has been passed down from generation to generation of Armstrongs. Everything gets passed down generation to generation. Even the drawing technique. They're great. I love Armstrong. He's definitely my favorite.
I want to point this out for anyone, any listener who is on the fence about continuing to read this or watch the anime.
later in, we meet Armstrong's sister.
She's awesome.
So I think that should be incentive enough to
she's,
read the entirety of this series.
She's baller as hell. Just fucking awesome.
After reading this, I definitely want to go back and watch it and finish reading it. You know, it's really good.
So
I feel like there's a very strong reason that this series is ranked as like the number one anime series of all time on many, many lists. And it's just, I mean, I don't know. We've just spent however long going gaga over characters, and I don't think we've said a bad thing about any of them, have we?
No, I think there's certainly characters who aren't, I mean, obviously there are characters who aren't nice people.
Gluttony.
But the homunculi and the Nina's dad, I already forgot his name. Yeah, like the characters are just so well fleshed out. I mean, I don't think fleshed out is the right term, because we don't get that much of like Shao Tucker, but he seems just as relevant as everybody else. You know, the characters are all presented as being. They all have value within the story and as people, and it's just the writer, and you know, he does such a great job of making you care about everybody. Like even Shao Tucker, like I had kind of forgotten that he turned Nina into a chimera when we started reading it. And he seems like a sympathetic dude at first, because he's like kind of this forgetful, absent-minded alchemist, and he wants to help Al and Edward. And then he turns out to be this completely evil dude. And we get him, he's in there for like an issue, and he has such impact. And it's like an emotional roller coaster in just a few pages. And that really says a lot about how well the characters are developed within this, within this manga.
Oh, man. That scene, there's like that one panel of the wife after she got transmuted into a chimera, and it's just her sitting there saying, "I want to die." Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And then when you keep reading and you realize that was the wife, it's like, oh, no. Oh, that's horrendous. It's like a literary kick in the nuts.
No, what kills me, I...
Play? Oh. Want to play?
I... Not even that. Okay. I actually, when I reread this today, I got to that part and I threw my book across the room and was like, why did I choose this? After Scar kills Shao Tucker, he goes for Nina, and Nina is sitting there, and she goes, "Daddy." No. It's horrible. It is horrible, and it's not just that, you know, her father got killed and she got turned into a chimera. It's that she's still calling for her daddy after he did this to her, and then she gets killed, and it is, like, the most heart-wrenching thing anyone's ever written in a book ever.
Yeah, because the wife knows what happened to her. And the wife knows that Shao Tucker did something wrong. And the wife knows that she'll never get anything back. Right? And so she knows her life is over. It's either she basically plays tricks for the crowd as Shao Tucker is talking chimera, or she gives up and dies. So she chooses that. But Nina just wants her dad to be proud of her. And even after the transmutation, she doesn't understand, probably, at that age, what happened to her or why daddy did that to her, but she just wants him to be happy. She just wants him to be proud. So even then, like, after the transmutation, she's trying to carry on and play and be Nina because that's what her dad wants. And then, oh, God. Just because she doesn't understand. She's too young. It's right in the heart. Just stab over and over. And then we get Marco, too. Marco is super sympathetic as well.
Yeah, he just wants to protect the people in his life, you know, and then it feels like he's just gotten dragged into everything, and he didn't want to do any of this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and does it say in here why he's even in hiding?
Well, he escaped with the information about creating Philosopher's Stone.
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right.
He felt guilty over the way his research was used during the Ishvar Civil War, and then he ran away and stole the research about the Philosopher's Stone.
Yeah, and stole it back and hid in the town and was basically making up for how he made the stone.
Yeah, he was atoning for his sins in the best way he could. Not even atoning. I think he says something along the lines of, he could never make up for what his research had done, and now he's going to try to help people till the end of his days, basically.
So then they find him, Ed and Al and Armstrong find him, and they basically get the research for like 10 minutes, and then they... Well, no, they don't even get the research. They talk to him, find out that they can make one, maybe, and then get sent off to Central to find it in the library there.
Right.
But then Lust finds him. Which I think is a really interesting interaction, because Lust knows what's going on there, too. So you get the sense that, like, Lust was involved over there in the war, and maybe that's where she's from, or, she's involved, she knows who Marco is. Whoops. She's involved, she knows who Marco is, and she's looking for the same thing, but it's... I go over in my head whether or not... Like, where is her moral line? Because you can really see it here in her interaction with Marco. She's completely willing to kill that girl. She does not care about her life. And then, so does she not care about the lives of the villagers? But if she doesn't care, why even spare Marco?
Well, oh, this is the thing I found really interesting. Because if you remember, like, earlier, it's her and Gluttony and Envy. And they're in that town that's like rioting, and she has no problem with them dying, and you know, like, there's actually plot reasons for that we find out later.
Yeah,
but there's a dude there, and he finds out, I mean, partly is they need to kill him because he found out that Envy was masquerading as the religious leader. But you hear the background, or you see the background noises, and, like, Gluttony's ripping him apart, and they're screaming and crunching and biting, and it's, like, you know, really gory, so you think, oh, you know, Lust doesn't have any morals regarding, you know, killing people or hurting them or torturing them. Yet, at the end of this chapter, we see Marco clutching the girl, and Lust didn't kill her, even though, you know, the girl had seen Lust and could identify her and saw that she was obviously not human. So that's, like, a really, to me, like, I don't know where Lust stands. Maybe she's arbitrary about it, but maybe she has some degree of morality. Yeah. She could have killed that little girl.
Because you get the feeling Envy and Gluttony are more of a chaotic evil. But where would Lust, because Lust isn't chaotic. I feel like she plans out more what she wants from her existence. Like, she knows what she wants from her life.
She's kind of somewhere between, like, lawful evil and
neutral.
Like, lawful neutral, not even lawful, like, because she She's evil in the fact that she is willing to, she's after her own ends, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's not a community protector like a paladin or something would be, right? But she is, you know, she doesn't feel the need to cross the line. She has no problem, like, killing people if that's what needs to be done, but she doesn't. But if it doesn't take that, if it doesn't have to go to that point, then it's okay. She doesn't have to. She won't go across that line.
Yeah, she won't just run off and kill people willy nilly. Like Gluttony, if Envy wasn't around, Gluttony would just eat people until somebody destroyed him. Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right. Because like in Gluttony, it's kind of in his name what he is. He's just going to eat and eat and eat and eat. He's a consumer. And Envy kind of by that name, you think that her goal is to get something that somebody else has. Not just that she's envious of it, but like she wants to have the same kind of existence that other people have. She wants to be something she isn't, which manifests in her constantly changing her form, you know, like she changes from this form to that form to the other one, you know, she's more of the shape changer. But lust, it's not necessarily that she wants something that somebody else doesn't have. She just, it's such an interesting adjective to choose, because on the one hand, it is just the simple wanting of something, but that's just want. Because it's lust, because it's the sinful extremity of it, it's like the violent wanting of something. She's willing to make sacrifices to get what she wants because she's lusting for it. It kind of pushes it over that edge of acceptability into the sinful realm, like all of them are named after.
And it's a bit more focused, too. You get the sense that she is playing more to the end game. Well, certainly more than Gluttony, because he does not have one.
No.
Clearly. He just wants to eat. But, like, maybe more than Envy, too. Because, I don't know, it almost seems like she's kind of the one in charge here. And the more I think about it, the more I feel like, I think we get the sense that she views people as animals, right? And, you know, she's kind of this really strong being. You can't kill her, as we saw with Marco trying to impale her. I don't necessarily know if she's as morally skewed as Envy, because you get the sense Envy takes pleasure in causing pain.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like, ha-ha, fuck you. Whereas Lust, I think she just views people as almost livestock, the same way that, you know, let's say there's a farmer and they have to, you know, cull the herd, or maybe, you know, it's butchering season and it's time to make meat. Like, it's just a task you have to do. And yeah, you're killing a living thing, but it's not on par with killing one of your own. Because the homunculi are not the same thing as humans. So she might just also be, I mean, she's goal focused. She does lust for the goal, but I think, I don't know, she's on a different moral plane than people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think all three of them see, well, at least the two that seem to have higher brain functioning see themselves as higher and above the human beings that they run across. Certainly higher than the non-alchemists. But yeah, it's interesting to have like a trio of villains. Like the goals and motives of these characters don't necessarily intersect with what the villains are doing. And it's the way this manga balances the goals of individual characters to create a bigger story where everyone gets to interact is really, really fascinating. Because Scar is the immediate villain. He wants to kill every national alchemist he can find. And he just wants to kill, kill, kill. And so he's the villain you have to solve a problem for right now. But Ed and Al could go on almost for forever and not know that the homunculi were out there shadowing them, trying to figure something out. Like, Ed and Al just want to get the Philosopher's Stone. They don't have a villain in their lives so much as they know. I mean, Scar shows up every once in a while, but they don't have a villain. They just have an enemy.
Yeah, you get the sense it's really... There's all these intertwining plots that are building up, but you can tell this is still exposition.
Yeah.
It's just... I also feel like... I don't know, I felt pretty engaged in the events. This didn't feel like slow exposition at all. It felt like, you know, they were diving right into the story.
Well, yeah, because Marco obviously played a part somehow, and, like, it's all exposition about how they interact in their past, with, like, Marco and Lust and the Philosopher's Stone and Ed and Al and even Armstrong recognizing him. Like, it all interacts to create exposition about the past, but it's an active story that you're moving through, so it's not like those pages at the end where they explain the Ishvaran War to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, what was your guys' favorite scenes? I talked over you. Damn leg.
I don't have a favorite scene. And it's because there's one scene in this that dominates, like, the whole thing and crushes my soul. And it's the Nina saying daddy scene.
Yeah.
I can't call it my favorite. I think that would... not be the accurate word, and maybe might mark me as a sociopath, right? Like, I'm not mentally ill in that sense, but, goodness, like, that scene is so indelible. I feel like since the first time I saw it in the original anime, like, many years ago, it was just, it's been there in my head, haunting me. And every time it refreshes, it, like, it hurts fresh. It's a new, like, psychological suffering to have to witness that. But I mean, that means it's well done, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, the idea of pain and suffering there is very well conveyed, and it makes you feel so sympathetic and empathetic towards these characters. And yeah, I won't call it favorite, but it's definitely the scene in this one for me.
How about you, David?
Well, it's kind of hard to pick a scene. I agree with Jen that the whole scene with Nina is very... it's probably definitely the most impactful, particularly in the Volume 2 that we just read. If I had to pick a favorite, I really enjoy the fight with Scar. I think that whole interaction between all the state alchemists and this very powerful mystery guy is really cool. Like, the action's well done. It's plausible as much as this can be. You know, the whole where Hawkeye saves Mustang from...
Yeah.
Making a fool of himself and putting himself in a position where he's gonna get killed by Scar. Mm-hmm. I mean, she saves him. She sweeps the leg and it keeps him from getting his face exploded. But yeah, it's hard to pick a single scene, so I'm gonna kind of cop out in the same way that Jen did. Not that yours was a cop out, Jen, but like it's hard to pick a single scene because this whole thing's really it's really good. You know, the whole. Whole comic. So, yeah.
My favorite, almost bar none, is when Armstrong punches the rock and turns it into like a bullet and explains that this is the Armstrong family technique passed on from generation to generation. He takes off his shirt and it's great because You want to laugh at him, and you want to write him off, except he actually is a badass. It's like, he's one of the... I think he's like the manga version of The Rock. Where it's like...
I feel like this...
It's all bravado and joking, except he actually is a badass, so it's not just bravado. He really is awesome.
And there's a character like this in every... I feel like there's one in every anime or manga.
Yeah.
Like in Naruto, it's Rock Lee's sensei guy.
Yeah.
Like, he is exactly like Armstrong in that he is full of bravado and... You know, he's always challenging Kakashi to fight, but you know what? He's a badass. He will kick your ass if you fuck around with him. So I think he's an archetypal manga character, but you know, I'm not trying to diminish
his character. It's archetypal for a reason.
He's a really great character. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Last thing to talk about, I think, would be the art then. What do you guys think of the art style of this manga?
I think this art is mad unique, and I have seen some of Arakawa's other work. She does a few anime / manga, and what it is so shonen tends to have more simplified facial lines, and I think we discussed this when we talked about like One Piece, for instance, and more action lines. And her art is actually, it feels a lot cleaner. The faces are recognizable, but really simple. They're very clean. And even the action scenes aren't, like, overwrought. There's a lot of movement lines, but they always point very clearly to, like, a focal point in the frame. And I think, you know, especially, I've read a lot of shonen manga, and... Sometimes, you know, manga style can make it hard for someone used to Western comics to identify what's happening just because there's so much going on. But I feel like her clean style makes the fight scenes really easy to read in this. So I really like her art.
Yeah, and it's super important because I've been kind of reading and keeping up with Attack on Titan, and the art style in that never gets any better. It's still confusing as hell every single time there's a fight scene. I don't know what the fuck is going on. And this, with all the transmutation and the dynamic stuff that people are doing, like Edward making a sword out of a pipe kind of a thing, like, it would be really, really easy to get lost in the art there and have that kind of get messed up, especially, like you said, because it's manga, not just the art style, but it's traditionally black and white, so you can't even differentiate necessarily what's going on with color when there's just, like, transmutation or power or energy floating around. Like, that has to just be done black and white with straight lines and inks, and that's tough to do, and it's done pretty well here. Especially with Armstrong punching a boulder.
Yes.
All right. I think we're ready to wrap this up and rate it. What do you guys think?
Sure.
All right.
Sounds good.
David, how about you go first?
Oh, man. Okay. You know, I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to give it a 4.5. I think... You know, I haven't read as much manga as I have read, like, comics and stuff. And I don't know if I would... I don't know if this is my favorite. I'm kind of lumping manga and anime together. But it's definitely, like, in my top 5 of favorites of all time. Because it's just... It's so good. I don't know what else to say about it, really. I'm glad we... I think this is a great choice, Jen. I don't have much of anything bad to say about it. I have nothing bad to say about it, really. I'm giving it a 4.5 because I don't know. I feel like fives shouldn't be handed out willy-nilly. And I gave Thor a 5.
We all did.
All right, so I'm going to give this a 5. It's just really good. I don't know what to say. What else to say? So I'm going to pass the mic.
Okay, Jen.
This is actually kind of tough, because having read the series and watched two different adaptations of it, it's like, okay, this is a really good volume. I was engaged the whole time, and I was super upset about Nina in a way that most things I read cannot get me upset. But I know it gets so much more awesome and better! And, like, in the context of the series itself, Volume 2, maybe it's a 3, you know? Like, it's good, but it gets so good. But reading it on its own, which is what we did here, I have to give it a 5, because I was engaged the whole way through. I love rereading this. It never gets old. So, 5 as well.
Okay. I'm gonna, rain on the parade. I'm gonna give it a 4.
Womp womp.
It's not a womp womp, it's still a 4. I just, I feel like Fullmetal Alchemist suffers a little bit from the Lord of the Rings problem, I think, where maybe Hiromu Arakawa set out and had this really big, cool idea with transmutation and stuff in mind, and how Edward and Elric became the way they were, and started on the path, but then didn't quite know where to go. The story kind of meanders here in the beginning. The same way, like, in the beginning of Lord of the Rings, the hobbits just kind of meander around for a while. But really, honestly, once Fullmetal Alchemist gets its sense of purpose, and the characters are driving towards a goal, and you can see how the lines will converge, and you're starting to kind of grasp at those threads yourself as the reader, then it's amazing. Then the manga has a brutally awesome finish. The anime is really fun to watch. It's a whole lot of twists and turns of who's here, who's doing what to who, why does this matter, like, how does what's happening today intersect with the past. Like, it's a really, really good long arc story, but in the beginning I feel like it's kind of like, okay, let's go out east, because east, and there's Marco out there, and Marco talks to Lust, but actually we need to go to Central, so we'll go back to Central on the way to the other place, and it's like, it's traveling around, I don't know, like, he breaks his arm, so then they go, they have to get a new arm made, but then to go back to Central, it's going here, going there, going da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Just let the story happen, it's cool. I don't know. That's my only complaint, and this is the only reason I'm giving it a 4, is I feel like there's just parts in these issues where I could just go, okay, I don't know. But that Nina issue, oh dear God, the feels. There's nothing like it I think we've ever read that made me want to go, fuck this, for making me hate life. but yeah, 4, I guess. So that's it for this week. Next week we're going to wrap up our Volume 2. By reading Conan Volume 2 by Kurt Busiek, collecting Conan issues number 7 and 9 to 14. And that'll be episode 199. That'll be the penultimate episode of Atomic Powered Supercast ever. Episode 200, guys. Because I'm going to drop this right now. There's only 2 episodes left. But episode 200 will be the last episode of Atomic Powered Supercast ever. Because we might all die. I can't guarantee anything after episode 200. Anyway, though, next week is Conan. Hit up our website, www.apsupercast.com. On the right, click on the button that says Future Shows. You can see everything we have coming up to episode 200. Because, like I said, after that, who the fuck knows? If you have a suggestion for what we should do with ourselves in the afterlife, go ahead and send us an email at
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
Or you can always hit us up on all of the social media stuff, twitter.com/APSupercast, facebook.com/APSupercast, and APSupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
There's the lag. time to edit the shit out of this one. All right, until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
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 Oh my God.